Would ALA APA counselors kindly take their seats? Good morning, council, and welcome. The chair calls the ALA APA information session and council to order. Two meetings have been combined to fit the new compressed schedule. This meeting will proceed as a council meeting, which will include much of what would have been shared at an information session. Would all councilors please occupy the reserved seats at the front of the room? At this meeting, unless there are objections, we will follow the rules that were approved at the 2005 annual conference council meeting as identified in APA council document number 3. Just as a reminder, please watch the overhead screens for the motion descriptions to use on your voting cards. I will also announce those for anyone who is visually impaired. And you may use only the descriptor that is on the screen and I announce. If you want to speak at this meeting, please go to a microphone, wait for recognition, then give your name and indicate if you are a division counselor, a chapter counselor, a counselor at large, or a roundtable counselor. Motion forms must be completed for all motions. For your convenience, the motion forms are available at each end of your table. Motion forms must be printed legibly, signed by the mover and seconder, and given to the projectionist before you go to the microphone. This will ensure that the overhead slide of your motion will be ready when your motion is introduced. You will be asked to raise your hands for all votes that are not adopted by general consent. Only if the vote seems close will I call for a standing vote. The chair has been advised by the parliamentarian that general consent should only be used for routine and non-controversial decisions, typically of a procedural nature, such as the decision to recess or change the agenda. Use of general consent is not an appropriate way of voting on main motions. Sorry. Please watch the overhead screen for the motion description to use on your voting card, and you may only use that descriptor. I said that already. if you must leave before adjournment, please take your card to Lois Ann Gregory Wood. It is ALA policy to employ a professional parliamentarian at midwinter meetings and at annual conferences. It is my pleasure to reintroduce ALA's parliamentarian, Ellie Mina. Also on the platform today, Maureen Sullivan, President-elect, Keith Michael Fields, Executive Director and Secretary of the Council, and Joanne Kempf, Director of the Office of ALA Governance. I would also like to reintroduce Danielle Alderson, our projectionist, and ALA APA Council Secretariat, Lois Ann Gregory Wood. This meeting is being captioned for the hearing impaired. Our captionist for this midwinter meeting is Kathy Cortipasse. I'm sorry, Kathy, I mess up your name almost every time I pronounce it. If you wish to take advantage of this service, please be seated on this side, on the left, on the right side of the room, your right, where you can see the screens. If there are no objections, the chair declares the rules governing this meeting adopted as identified in APA Council Document Number 3. Thank you. We need to establish a quorum. A quorum for council meetings is 75 councilors. I have been advised that we have over 75 councilors present, therefore we have a quorum. Thank you. The agenda, APA Council Document Number 1, revised 1/21/12, 9:30 p.m., and all other documents are available at the pickup station in this room. Under the 24-hour rule, we have received one resolution that did end up on the agenda that is added to our new business. No, it's not added to our new business. It's actually on the agenda. Are there any objections to the agenda? I'm hesitating a little bit because I understood that there was going to be, it's not this one, okay, I apologize, all right. Okay, I'm sorry, thank you. You were emailed the minutes of the 2011 ALA Annual Conference, APA Council Document Number 2. Copies are also available at the document pickup station in this room. Are there any corrections to be noted? If there are no corrections, the chair declares the ALA APA Council minutes from the 2011 ALA Annual Conference adopted. Thank you. First on our agenda is a report from the ALA APA Executive Director, APA document, Council Document Number 5. I now call upon Keith Michael Fields to present his report. Keith?
Thank you, Molly. Probably the most important news, and it is sad news, is that on July 1st, Jennifer Grady left ALA to relocate to seek new opportunities in Tennessee, I believe. After her excellent 3 years of service as the APA director and the person who actually brought it into existence. I'm equally, while I'm pleased that the job that Jennifer has done, and we are very eager to see her do well in her new endeavors, at the same time we're very, very excited that Laurel Swader has taken over and is now serving as the APA director. Laurel, are you here? Okay, stand up and be seen. Laurel. Great. Many of you know Laurel. HRDR has been doing a fabulous job, whether it's the new recruitment website, the career development that they've been doing, the fact that Laurel has taken on and successfully sustained and grown the Emerging Leaders Program. So we're very excited that Laurel has now agreed to take on the APA. And Laurel will be performing those duties on a part-time basis with some help from some other part-time assistants within ALA and some a grant-funded position from the IMLS grant for the support staff certification. I will direct your attention to the report on the certification programs, salary survey, library work life, the salary and status of library workers. Basically at this point, I will open up for any questions that anyone has. The certification programs are moving ahead and doing well. And if I can't answer a question, certainly Laurel can.
Seeing no one at the microphone, thank you very much, Keith. Great. Next on our agenda is a report from the ALA APA Treasurer. I now direct you to APA Council Document Number 4 and Number 4.1 and call upon James G. Neal to present his reports. Jim?
Yes, my name is James George Neal, and I brought my birth certificate with me just in case. So. I have the privilege today to provide you with the ALA APA Treasurer's report. I think it's very important to keep in mind what the focus of ALA APA work is. It's set up to provide national certification for library workers, and we have two active certification programs. APA advocates for salaries and training for library workers, and in terms of the budget, does provide very valuable reports and analyses to the field and to the profession. The thrust of the report today is to look at the results from fiscal year 2011. And you can see here the outline of the major revenue categories for APA and a comparison from year 2010 to 2011. You can see that the mainstay of the operating revenues continues to be subscriptions with some modest revenue continuing to come in from the certification fees. If you'll turn the page, you'll see that the operating expenses also were largely in balance. We did have an increase in cost in 2011 of $22,353. You'll recall that this has been a process of right-sizing the budget of APA, and I think we've got it in the right place at this point. You'll see on the net revenue page, which is the next one, that we completed the year with a net revenue of $30,153. I should note that this included in the ALA APA budget is the repayment of the interest on the loan to ALA. And so the $7,875 that was due to us, ALA, from APA, was covered in the 2011 financial picture. That means, if you look at the assets, the APA ended up the year with net assets of a negative $184,404. That is an improvement. It's a steady improvement. You'll see from the condition that we had in 2010. And this has been basically the ability of APA not only to repay its interest payments to us, but actually, if you look at the next slide, you'll see that the budget also enabled full payment of $50,000 from APA to ALA, dropping the loan balance from 275 to 225. So we're in a position, I think, where we'll see regular payments on the principal as well as continuing payments on the interest as it continues to carry out its primary responsibilities of certification, advocacy, and information sharing. We do also have a first quarter snapshot of the APA fiscal 2012 budget, and the last slide does present you with what it looks like during the first quarter of the year, both the annual budget in the left column for revenue and expenses, the year-to-date budget, remember it's only through 11/30, the actuals that we have accrued, and the variance. The conclusion of the APA, FNA, and BARC committees is that we're on target with our overall financial goals for APA for the fiscal year 12, and that we see at the end of the process the ability to continue to pay interest on the loan and to also to build into the budget of APA continuing payment to ALA against the principal of the loan. That's a summary of the picture for APA finances as we concluded fiscal year 11 and as we begin fiscal year 12.
Are there any questions for James George Neal?
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I now direct you to ALA APA Council Document Number 7 and Council Document Number 7.1, the recommendation from the Presidential Task Force for Improving the Effectiveness of ALA's Council regarding the ALA APA Council, and call upon immediate past President Roberta Stevens to present the recommendation. But before I do that, I would just like to say I know there's been some discussion about this on the council list, and one of the things we've become very aware of is that we need some clarification on the issue, so I just want to assure you that there's not going to be a resolution coming forward at this meeting that you are being asked to vote on. I will tell you how we'll move forward, but I'd like to ask Roberta to speak, and then if I could get council consent to allow Jim Reddick, the chair of that task force, to speak briefly about this issue so that council will have some context that it hasn't before. Jim is not a member of council, so I need your consent for him to speak. Okay, microphone number 5, Roberta.
Roberta Stevens, immediate past president. I'm going to actually provide some context for the context that you'll be hearing. But in the fall, if you refer to the document that was distributed at the back of the room, in reference to this discussion, CD number 7, and refer to page 1 of the appendix. The context is that in the fall of 2010, as the president, I appointed a task force, and the task force was for improving the effectiveness of ALA's council. There were a number of charges, and you see them laid out there. Among them was to recommend options for preparing for council business ahead of the meeting, et cetera. But in particular, I want to call your attention to preparing recommendations on the timing, scheduling, and content of council sessions with the aim of making them as productive and worthwhile as possible, and to really make recommendations, as you see in number five, on additional improvements to the way council conducts its business resulting from the work of the task force. We had a very, very capable task force who came forth with a number of recommendations and suggestions for business. I think that if you are a member of council who was present at the annual conference in New Orleans, you will remember the three-hour last session that we had that focused on the many, many suggestions that they made. Only a few required action. This was one of them. And so, with some background, Ellie Mina, who's been our parliamentarian in delivering reports to Keith Michael Fields and to council after our conferences and midwinter meetings, has a number of times made a recurring recommendation for changes to be made to the ALA-APA Council. And in the work of the task force, this recommendation grew out of that theme that they saw. So I am going to step aside now and have Jim speak in more depth about this recommendation.
Microphone number five, past president Jim Reddick and chair of this task force.
Thank you for your indulgence, Council. The starting point of the discussions of the Council Effectiveness Task Force was, what's the best thing about Council? Other than you, of course, the best thing is it's a highly representative cross-section of the association. It's a underutilized brain trust for strategic thinking about the profession and the association. The agendas are not structured to really tap into that. So we were looking at the agendas of the council, the APA council, the time allocated to those meetings, and also at the minutes of the APA council meetings. And in recent time, these have basically been information sessions because there hasn't been action and they have adjourned early. Now the APA, the ALA Council, number three in recent years, has consistently adjourned early, but we still think that there's this opportunity to take some time aside from the council agenda for some real good strategic brainstorming with this group. Every 5 years, ALA develops its strategic plan. That is not a council product. It comes out of the divisions and the executive board primarily, and there are all those years in between to help advance that plan, and discussion of that is something that we think council could help with. When we looked at those agendas and the schedules, the biggest piece of time in there was the APA council. So we also looked at the history of the APA council. The initial proposals for the APA did not include a council. In part, I think this was because of sound governance theory. Councils represent constituents who are members. APA has no members. So the original proposal for APA would be that it would have a board of directors. That board of directors would be coextensive with the ALA executive board. There's no real good documentary history of how the council came into being, other than it appears it came up in evening forums and hallway discussions, and so the council was added. It was fairly active with lots of questions as APA was getting on its feet in those early years. It now has financial stability. There is significant member oversight of APA Council. It's called the APA BART Committee, and we just heard from the APA treasurer reporting what they and management and the finance staff do to look at the finances to make sure that good information comes to you and others who are interested parties in the APA. The major reason for that recommendation from the Council Effectiveness Task Force to revert to that original structure of a board of directors but no council was to benefit ALA rather than APA. We don't think there would be any detriment to the APA if it did not have a council. It would still have capable management in its board of directors. The executive director would have ample opportunity through the information sessions to report progress and finances and such to interested ALA members, and then there would be that time available to the ALA Council for that strategic thinking, and maybe some procedural changes and new practices that have been experimented with in the past, roundtable discussions and small groups and that sort of a thing. We don't know what form that might take. However, your president-elect is an expert at these sorts of things and would probably have some ideas if the opportunity arises. So that's the context for this. Nobody was out to get APA. Our charge was to take care of ALA's effectiveness. Now, why didn't this come to you in June? Because the bylaws limit the opportunity for changes to the bylaws. The authority for that exists in this body and the Board of Directors. I reported to the Board of Directors in New Orleans. They deliberated on this at their fall meeting, and that brings us to this point. Thank you for your time.
So what I would like to do is we will have discussion on this, but I wanted to tell you that what we expect will happen is that we will have discussion here. There can continue to be discussion on the council list. And in deference to the work of this committee, that we would actually put it forward as a resolution and then council could vote it up or down at the summer conference. We need to give notice, and it would require a two-thirds vote at the summer conference. So with that information, I'll now open it for discussion in microphone number 5.
Al Kagan, ALA APA CERT counselor. CERT would like to go on record that we are opposed to eliminating the ALA APA council. I was on the council when ALA APA was established. At that time, the CERT Action Council and membership had quite a discussion about the establishment of the new organization. Some of us thought it should be a membership organization, just like ALA, and therefore the council would represent that membership. I think the compromise that we were okay with at that time, most of us anyway, was that we would have a council where we could debate and we could oversee the organization and we would have some governance and there would be light and transparency and we would have an impact and an input. And I think that if we lose the council, most of that will go away. And only the people that are really paying close attention to what the executive board is doing will actually know what's going on. So we would like to maintain the possibility of having an input and an impact through a council. I also want to respond a little bit to what Jim just said. I know that there have been resolutions put forward in the past at these meetings, maybe not very many, but there have been some. And so it's not like nothing has happened at these meetings. Something has happened several times. So I think that needs to continue, and I just wanted to state that for the record. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 7.
Tom Wilding, Councillor at Large. I was very involved with the development of APA back in 2000-2001 and was very much a part of those backhaul conversations that Jim Rettig alluded to, and it was mostly backhaul conversations and forum discussions. There was a fear on the part of many people on council at the time that this organization was going to be, you know, a problem, and they wanted some control over it. And it was also clear that if we came forward with bylaws that did not include the APA Council, it would not pass. And the APA Council was written into the bylaws in order to gain the support of enough people to put the APA on the map. And that did happen. I was on the original group that developed this, and I wasn't in favor of the APA Council. As a matter of fact, I thought that that was probably not a necessary thing to have. But 10 years later, I have come to think that the APA Council plays an important role. And I think the important role is, for one, a sense of ownership. We are the governing body of ALA, and the APA serves as a service bureau to ALA, and therefore really is a sort of a vital piece that is, while not part of ALA, it is in some strange way an appendage, and the health of that appendage is important to us. What it is doing is important to us. I believe at some point in an early part of this recommendation, it alluded to the fact that APA was doing mostly certification work. And that's fine, but its bylaws are broader than that. And I think that we need to continue to focus not just on certification, but the broader things that are in the bylaws and that should be in the bylaws. Advocacy for workers, advocacy for salaries, things like that, that were very much a part of why APA came into existence. And as long as that's the case, I think it would be derelict for the ALA Council, the APA Council, to vote itself out of existence, because I want APA to continue to be strong. And I think that we are part of why the APA has been a success, and that we will continue to be in that role, and that we should. Al Kagan is right. We have done things. We have voted and approved.
The time is up, Tom. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Thank you very much. Microphone number 4.
Good morning. My name is Janice Greenberg, counselor at large.
Closer to the mic.
Janice,
could you come a little closer to the mic? I think
of
it's you're not quite as clear.
Sorry.
That's better. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Janice Greenberg, counselor at large. I really respect all the work that the Presidential Task Force has done on this issue. However, when I was hearing the report, I was thinking to myself, I really don't think the APA Council should be abolished, because here can be a good voice for the advocacy, an additional voice for the advocacy of our support staff worker and other workers in libraries. And I just, that's my reason. Thank you very much. If you could talk to me off.
Thank you very much, Janice. Microphone number 5.
Charles Kratz, APA Counselor at Large. I would, you know, my point here is that I would hope that council would be take some time to vet this. I mean, although Jim has and Roberta have both made cases here in terms of there are no ALA members, and with all due respect to the ALA Executive Board, which I served on a couple of years ago, we are elected through chapters and through the membership. You know, not every member of the ALA Executive Board is elected from the membership, elected from council. So I'm really concerned about that point. I understand in the proposal that everything, all the committees are going to be folded into a committee of 9, but this is a really critical time in library legislation, in our economy, and the status of library workers and salaries is more important than ever. And I don't want to get that lost in terms of what we're trying to do. So I understand the need for efficiency and trying to be more effective, and I respect the task force and respect the executive board, but I would caution us to think about this very carefully. It's an hour out of our time, and I think there's even more that we could be doing. And what's happening, I mean, I don't want to get into politics here, but what's happening to unions across the country right now, I mean, this seems to me to be at the forefront of what we need to be doing and advocating for.
Thank you. Microphone number 6.
Larry Romans, counselor at large. I'm of a mixed mind about this. I think that generally these APA meetings are a waste of time, because we really do just have reports and we rubber stamp a budget. At the same time, I agree with Tom that basically this APA has turned into a certification program only. The salary studies are coming out less often. A lot of other things that we hope to do, we haven't been able to do because money is tight. I hope there's some kind of middle ground where there is still some control from council or membership without having all of us meeting for a half an hour or an hour, whether it's having a mini council that this council elects that would meet at a separate time of 20 members instead of 175 members, or how we would do it. But I agree that we need to still have some kind of control, because at some point we may be in a situation where council would like to redirect APA into more a worker orientation. And I think if we don't have any control from council, that will be hard for us to push with the board of directors.
Thank you. Let me just take a stab at how we might move forward at this point, seeing no, I'm sorry, microphone number 7.
Since I've spoken once, I'm now on my second time because nobody else is at the microphone. Tom Wilding, APA counselor at large. Is it, and I don't have the bylaws in front of me, is it mandated that the APA council meet twice a year in the bylaws? Because another change we could make is to make it meet once a year. And not do away with it, but cut in half the amount of time we spend on it per year. And we could probably do the business required of setting budget ceilings and stuff like that in that once a year meeting. And it would save time. And time doesn't equal effectiveness. Effectiveness means you're doing the right things, not necessarily doing them fast. So I would suggest that there, as Larry pointed out, other ways of approaching this.
Okay. The bylaws do say twice a year. However, the bylaws can be amended. Microphone number 7.
Pat Wand, counselor at large. I also was a member of the council when we created APA, and I remember well the precautions we wanted to take to protect the separation between ALA, which is a 501c3 organization, and APA, which puts us into a different category. So I'm sensitive to the issues that we're dealing with here. I also was a member of the task force serving with Jim on this issue, and am sensitive to the kind of time frame that we spend on APA activities. I have a question and a suggestion for consideration. The question I'll pose and then see if we can get the answers after I stop talking, but I'll also give the suggestion. My first question is, are there committees or advisory groups active now in APA? And could we take that kind of activity plus perhaps some oversight responsibility, this is the suggestion, and change it into a standing committee of ALA? So my first question really is, what kind of activities are happening under the umbrella of APA that represent advice from ALA members as APA is developing? And that's one need for data I think would be helpful to all of us. And then the other follow-up consideration that I just put out in the discussion mode of perhaps changing from an APA council to becoming a standing committee of ALA, reporting like all of the ALA council committees do now to us at both of our conferences.
I'd like to ask Keith Michael Fields to respond to what he wants to respond to in that question.
We have had some, when this recommendation, we started looking at it, have done some thinking about this. Committee on Salary and Status of Library Workers was an ALA committee, and at the time the APA was formed, that committee was then moved over to become part of the APA. Let me explain to you that there is a need for information here. As a 501c3, there are some limitations on our activity. However, many state associations have passed, for instance, minimum salary requirements. I think as you look at certain issues, the issue of at what point an ALA activity would really become something that would be potentially challenged is a legal issue and probably one that we do need to look at. There is some room for latitude. And obviously what you'd have to do is look at the functions and look at how they might be embedded. The APA could be a report at the council meeting in the same way that the Freedom to Read Foundation reports at the council meeting. So I think some examination as to those functions and some clarification as to the degree of latitude within ALA would be relevant.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. Speaking practically, I certainly think that we should take a look at pruning out the APA committees that are basically just a mirror image of ALA committees, but ones that have no function under the APA. I think we could get rid of quite a bit of verbiage in the policy manual, because I remember doing that for like the resolutions committee, for example, and carefully getting that all set up so we could do some cleanup there. I also like the idea of possibly looking at one meeting a year, but I still think it's a governance issue that the broader governing body should be involved in. Also, I'm very happy with our getting money and doing the certification for non-library professional personnel and so on. I think that's extremely important. It's starting to pay its way. But I also think we've lost the thread of advocacy within APA in case we want to take on something that could be challenged under, I'm not going to repeat the 103C or whatever it is. I think we need to protect that, and I think also in the coming years, with all the privatization of public library administration and other issues that are now coming to the fore, we may well involve ourselves in advocacy issues that are controversial and that could allow us to be challenged as an ALA for a nonprofit status. And so I think we have to be extremely careful in what we do.
Thank you. I will say that we are running out of time. We have about 5 minutes left, a little less. Microphone number six.
Mario Gonzalez, APA Counselor at Large. I do not support abolishing the APA Council. I respect the work of the committee, and I was hoping that they would take a look while they were working with effectiveness on how we can restructure the APA Council meeting. I agree with Councilor Roman in terms of that we are presented with reports, but there's very little time for deliberating and discussing issues related to APA. In terms of eliminating committees, I would think that APA BARC would be eliminated. And as you know, BARC is a committee of council. I sit on BARC. And the deliberations of the budget of APA would probably go to finance and audit, which is a committee of the executive board. Therefore, board of directors of APA, and I have a concern about that. I think that us as councillors representing divisions and memberships would be the best advocate for APA to continue its success across the association, rather than limiting to a smaller body that does not get directly represented and elected by the membership, as Councillor Kratz mentioned before. So I would vote, I would represent that I would not support abolishing the APA Council.
Thank you. Microphone 7.
And Blaine Hilliard, Councillor at Large. I am leaning toward abolishing the ALA-APA Council for the reasons cited in the report. On page 4, it talks about the many ways that ALA-APA issues can be conveyed to Council and to the rest of the membership. And I don't think that it diminishes the importance of the various issues. We will simply be able to come at them from another angle. And I would also like to point out that this is the most ALA-APA Council discussion that we've had in a long time.
Thank you. Microphone 6.
Christine Lindhage, PLA Councillor to APA, ALA-APA. I, too, lean a little bit toward the abolishment of the APA Council, but I do like the idea of meeting once a year, and I wondered if it would be possible to have a revised recommendation brought back for consideration at annual conference, incorporating the comments that have been made from the floor.
I think actually we will figure out a path forward from this. I'd rather not say exactly what it is, because I'd like to have some people kind of put it together.
But would we have to vote on this right now?
No. The APA Council will meet at the summer conference. If we do nothing, we can continue the discussion on the council list. We can come forward with some options and see if we can get some sense of where council might be, and then we could come back with some recommendations. If we're going to amend the bylaws, that would have to, we would have to give notice and change it. So we would have to do that for a going from two meetings to one. But that could happen at the summer conference, and then we could go forward from that. I'd like to go to microphone 3 so that we can get a comment in, since we're just about out of time. Microphone 3.
Mary Biblow, Councillor at Large. I simply wanted to say this, that I agree with the councillor, I forget her name, who said that this had a lot to do with the status of the organization. The C, what was that, C1?
C3 and C6?
I can't hear you.
C6 is what APA is. Right. C3 is what ALA is.
Right. Because I can recall this whole subject came during the time that Mitch Friedman was president of ALA, and that was a big question, whether you could have APA or you could have certification without APA. Therefore, I would recommend that we start from a real positive way, and in order to get down to a real good discussion is to find out what are the legal ramifications of the functioning of APA and certification. Thank you.
Thank you. We are out of time for this council session of APA. We will get back to you with some specifics about what options we might take a look at it. Thank you very much for this discussion. The ALA-APA Council is adjourned, and we will convene as the ALA Council at 11:15 in this room.